We're going to read the passage. We're going to read the passage, and then instead of like an opening prayer from me, we'll do this little litany together, and you'll see why we're going to do that in just a second. Okay, so the passage for today is Ecclesiastes chapter 4, the whole chapter. Hear the word of the Lord. Again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors there was power, and there was no one to comfort them. And I thought the dead who are already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been born and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun. And then I saw that all toil and all skill in work come from man's envy of his neighbor. This also is vanity and striving after wind. The fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh. Better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and a striving after wind. And again I saw the vanity under the sun. One person who has no other, either son or brother, yet there is no end to all his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, "For whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure?" This also is vanity and an unhappy business. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Better was a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who no longer knew how to take advice. For he went from prison to the throne, though in his own kingdom he had been poor. I saw all the living who move about under the sun, along with that youth who was to stand in the king's place, and there was no end of all the people, all of whom he led. Yet those who come later will not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity and a striving after wind. So let's do this litany, and I'll explain why we're going to do this. I'll explain after the fact why we're going to do this together. Okay, so two things about this, or really one thing. There's a word on the back that's calumniated. That may not be a familiar word for you. Calumniated means defamed. Okay, so when we get there, that's what that means. Calumniated means defamed. Oh, Jesus, meek and humble of heart.
Jesus,
from the desire of being esteemed.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being loved.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being sought.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being honored.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being praised.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being preferred.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being consulted.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being approved.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being considered.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being humbled.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being despised.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being rebuffed.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being calumniated.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being forgotten.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being ridiculed.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being wronged.
Deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being suspected.
Deliver me, Jesus.
That others may be more loved than I.
Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it.
That others may be esteemed more than I.
Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it.
That others may grow in the opinion of the world and I diminish.
Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it.
That others may be employed and I set aside.
Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it.
That others may be praised and I forgotten.
Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it.
That others may be preferred before me in everything.
Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it.
That others may be more holy than I, provided I am as holy as I can be.
Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it.
Lord, give us these things. Send your Spirit among us now as we study your word. Soften our hearts to receive it. Amen. This litany of humility, I encourage you to take this and pray it regularly. This is something that I try to do with some frequency. I haven't been very good about it lately, but it's been helpful in my own life. I suspect on some of those phrases you might have choked. Me too.
You didn't have to show everybody, though.
Yeah. So, the passage for today is Ecclesiastes chapter 4. We're going to break it up into three parts. The benefits of being together with other people, the benefits of community, the obstacles to community, and then how to remove the obstacles, okay? The benefits of community, the obstacles to community, and then how to remove the obstacles. So in verses 8 through 12, this is the benefits of community. You remember we talked a few sessions ago, it was the beginning of chapter 3, verses 1 to 15. For everything under the sun, there is a time for everything. There is a time for this and a time for that, right? And people who don't know anything about Ecclesiastes, they know that, right? Well, maybe there's like a second, like a runner-up. And here's the runner-up, you know? The stuff that he has to say about two being better than one. And the final proverb here about a threefold cord is not easily broken, that kind of thing. So here's our runner-up for most well-known. So let's unpack it. Let's see what they have to say about the benefits of community, starting there in verse 8 or 7. Again, I saw vanity under the sun. And that's going to tell us what it is that he saw. Your translation, if you look closely, it probably has a colon after that. Okay, it's going to introduce to you the reason why he saw the vanity. Remember, the vanity is the meaninglessness. That's the idea. And under the sun means without God. Apart from God. And what we've seen so far, just real quick before we dive into 7 and 8 here, what we've seen so far is that sometimes the preacher here in Ecclesiastes will take us right up to what I'm calling the cliff. Right? He shows us some particular thing that we're striving after, and on the surface it looks shiny and glittery, but he takes us to the bottom of it. I'm switching metaphors, stay with me. He takes us to the bottom of it, and it's not so nice. And then sometimes he takes us out the other side and shows us an alternative. Sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he just leaves us there at the bottom. Today is a leave you there at the bottom passage. I'm not going to leave you there at the bottom. But you need to know that there's this kind of alternating thing that he'll do periodically. So here in verse 7, he's going to say, I saw this additional vanity. And what is it? Well, it's in verse 8. One person who has no other. A loner, someone all by themselves. He doesn't have a son or a brother. He doesn't have any family. And then it says, yet there is no end to all his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, why am I doing all of this? That's at the end of verse 8. For whom am I toiling? What's the point? And then we get in verse 9, two are better than one. That's our kind of theme statement here for this, the benefits of community. Two are better than one. Well, how are they better than one? He's going to tell us now. He's introducing his sort of theme, this kind of thesis. Two are better than one, verse 9, because. And he's going to give us several illustrations of how two are better than one. So let's look at them together. They're at the end of verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for all their toil. What that means is, let me take for example this. If you have one 2x4 and it can hold, let's say, 15 pounds. Okay, let's just make that up. And you bring in another 2x4 and you put that together with the other one, it's going to hold more than 30 pounds. Okay? Because of the conjunction of those two things together, it can do more than either one by itself. The word is synergy. That's what that word is. Right. You get two 2x4s. One holds 15 pounds by itself. The other one holds 15 pounds by itself. You put it together, they hold more than 30 pounds. If you're making a bed, it is faster to make a bed with two people than one, obviously. But it's more than double. That's the point. So like if you're making the bed, you know, and you pull this sheet. I don't know how you do it. You pull this sheet and maybe the cover. Whoa. I don't know how you make your bed. Man. The way I make my bed is I take the sheet, I kind of yank it up, you know, and then like the cover, yank it up, and then walk around to the other side and yank the sheet up, yank the cover up, and then I'll do that, and I walk around the other side. But if you got two people on either side, it goes more than twice as fast.
Right.
Okay. That you get a greater reward. You get a greater reward for your toil. That's the point. And we've all experienced that. So this is his first illustration. Two are better than one because of the 2x4 example. It goes more than twice as fast. That's his first illustration. And then he gives several, kind of three separate illustrations here in verse 10. He gives another example. Two are better than one. Why? Verse 10 starts with a causal word. For. Because. Two are better than one because if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone, for when he falls, when he's alone and he falls and he has not another to pick him up. Now, you got to transport your mind's eye to the ancient Near East. There are no street lamps at night. There are very few paved roads at night. There's no flashlights. You know, so this is a legit thing. And further, there are lots of places where they have what are called bitumen pits, which are kind of like mines, which are just there by the road. So later, you know, Jesus says in one of the Gospels, how can the blind lead the blind? For they'll both fall into a pit. Because they can't see the road. So if you're walking along, it's not just like, oh, if you stumble a little bit, somebody's going to catch you, and isn't that nice? It's not just that. It's you might die because no one will know you're there. You know, you've heard stories about somebody who goes out like into the desert to ride a mountain bike or whatever it is they do, or go hike or something. They tell no one where they've gone, and something crazy happens, and they're stuck because no one knows where they are. No one can help them. That's what he's talking about there. So that's his second illustration about why two are better than one. The ideas here are, he gives three different ways to say you can care for each other. That's the idea. The first thing, two are better than one because you get a greater return for your work. Many hands make light work. Many hands make light work. The second thing is you can care for each other. And he gives this example about falling. And then in verse 11, about cold. And again, verse 11, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? When they traveled in the ancient Near East, they didn't have sleeping bags. There were not like hotels, you know, on the side. I mean, there were some, but they were very few and far between. And so when you got tired and when it got too dark to travel, guess what? You pulled up a rock, you know, and you just laid there. And it gets cold in the desert. It gets cold at night because there's no water to retain the heat in the air. And so it gets really cold. So you cuddle up so you don't freeze to death. But if you don't have anybody to cuddle up to, tough. Another reason, another instance in which you can care for each other. And the next thing there is in verse 12, they can protect each other. Protect each other. And verse 12, and though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. Now you need to, again, go back to the ancient Near East and consider these kind of like traveling along places. There's not, you know, the sheriff is nowhere near. You remember the parable of the Good Samaritan, the person who is, and he fell among
thieves
and robbers. Right. So that was a thing. Like, you know, if you're traveling along, good luck, because there are people out there waiting to get you. Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians. And he kind of gives this long story about all the stuff that he's done. And he talks about how I've been in danger constantly on the road, in the cities. I've been in danger from robbers and thieves, and been in danger from false Christians. So he says here, that if you're together, you can protect each other. Another instance or illustration in which two are better than one. Okay? And then it gives this concluding what's kind of a proverb. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. It's not impossible to break it. It just takes a little while longer. You've got that synergy. You've got that protection. It's not impossible, but it takes a little while longer. Okay, the benefits of community, there they are. You get a greater return on your work. You can be protected more, and you can be cared for.
It's the caring for I love.
Yeah, she says the caring for that I love. And so the our culture promotes independence. So if you're dependent, that's a bad thing. So what you want to be is independent. Because if you're independent, then you're strong, you are reliable. And what this passage is saying is there's actually an even better way. And it's interdependence. We still don't want to be dependent, where we're always, always getting and we're never giving. We also don't want to feel like we're the ones, you know, we don't need anybody else. This passage is saying the opposite is the case. It's about interdependency. And the way that works is everybody has something to give everybody else. And so we'll come to the king in a minute, the foolish king who kept his own counsel. Nobody had something to give him. He had gotten to the level of independence, which is where many of us strive for. But the passage is getting at here, the great benefit of community here is this interdependency. There are times you've all experienced this when you're in a bad place. You don't have much to give, but somebody else comes along and they help you out. And then a year later, the situation is reversed, right? So interdependency, that's the watchword of this first point here, the benefits of community. What about the obstacles? Our second point, the obstacles. I'll just list them and we'll talk about them. Envy, that's in verses 4 through 6. Greed, that's in verse 8. And pride, verses 13 through 16. Envy, greed, and pride. This is what moves us. This is what bumps us down from that top level of interdependency and leaves us down in this independence place. These things, envy, greed, and pride. Let's look at what the text says here in verses 4 through 6. Then I saw that all the toil and all skill and work come from a man's envy of his neighbor. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. Now, remember I keep harping about the genre here. Because you got to remember, with Proverbs, which is, it's not the book of Proverbs, but it has many Proverbs in it. A standard in a proverb is a kind of a general principle, a general proposition. There are exceptions to it, but it's a general statement, a general proposition. And you can see here a couple of verses before, he talked about how it's great to delight in your work and to work hard for God's glory. That's a good thing. So you got to keep that in mind with this statement here, which is very broad and very general. Then I saw that all toil and all skill, okay, it's hyperbole to make his point. In work come from a man's envy of his neighbor. What does that mean? He's saying that envy drives industry. Envy is the engine for hard work for many people most of the time. What does that mean? So let's unpack this for a second. There's a technical difference between envy and jealousy. Usually we'll use those terms interchangeably and synonymously, and that's fine. But there is a difference. And this is something that theologians down through the centuries have hammered out and talked about, and there's a huge, well-traveled path in this area. Envy is sorrow at another person's good. And envy, most children are not jealous, they're envious. They want what the other kid has, the other toy, because they don't want the kid to have it. Right? It's not that when my kids are, like, if we have a play date, kids come over to my house, or whatever, and my son has got some Ninja Turtle, which he has long since forgotten about. And his friend picks up the Ninja Turtle, and all of a sudden, that Ninja Turtle is the center of my son's world. Right? He has to have the Ninja Turtle. Not because he really, really wants it, but because he doesn't want the other guy to have it. That is envy. Jealousy is wanting an additional Ninja Turtle. You see the difference? It's where you want one also. You see what I'm saying? In envy, you want to take what the other person has. You don't want them to have it. In jealousy, you want one also. You see that? So the word here, as it's being used in the passage, doesn't have that kind of a fine-grained distinction. The Hebrew language seldom has those kind of like fine-grained distinctions. Greek is much more like that, with those fine-grained distinctions. But you need to know that, because if you look in your own heart, you'll see it. You'll see it. Envy, he says, is the engine of industry. Keeping up with the Joneses. That's what he's saying. Right? And so much of work is the desire, he's saying, the desire to get what somebody else has or to take what they have. This is an obstacle to interdependency. Isn't that obvious? Right? It's an obstacle. Another obstacle, we could say a lot more about these, but it's not the main point of the passage here, what these are. These are just obstacles, okay? Another obstacle is in verse 8, greed. He says in 7, again, I saw vanity under the sun, one person who has no other, by himself. He's independent. I don't need anybody. One person who has no other, yet there is no end to all his toil. Why? Why is there no end to this person's toil? It gives the answer. His eyes are never satisfied with riches. The eye in the ancient Near East is the organ of desire. His desires are never fulfilled. The word greed is often has a synonym, avarice. Anybody heard that word, avarice? Yeah. That comes from a Latin word, which is avere, which means to crave. Crave something. And the desires are never satisfied. That's why he says, the eye is never satisfied with these riches. So whatever that is, and the riches are just a symbol of whatever it is, because money can buy lots of stuff, whatever it is. Right? So this person is not satisfied. Why is this an obstacle?
Craving is more intense to me.
Right.
As far as the wanting.
Yeah, exactly. She said craving is... That's right. It actually captures you. And that's why the opposite of greed is... Or the opposite of that Latin term, avarice, the opposite... And by the theologians, is what they called libertas. Greed. We might say greed, and the opposite is generosity. Not exactly. The opposite of greed or avarice, because it captures you, is liberty. Being free from the capturing effect of whatever those things are. Because greed is internal. It's not an external thing. It manifests itself in certain ways for different people, but it's an internal thing. All right, so this is an obstacle. Why is this an obstacle? And the answer is, it's an obstacle to community because when you are captured by whatever that is, that you can't be satisfied, right? I said earlier, in an earlier class, no one ever said, I've got enough money. No one ever said that. This may be apocryphal, but I've heard when Andrew Carnegie was asked, how much money is enough for you? His answer was, just a little more. A little more. And that's the answer of someone who's captured by whatever it is that they're craving. This is an obstacle to community because you will sacrifice relationships to get the desired object. Or you will use relationships to get the desired object. You see that? And so you're not being interdependent. You're being manipulative, because you're using people to get the thing that you're craving, right? And maybe that's the reason why this guy doesn't have anybody. Maybe he did. Not anymore. Because you can only do that to so many people until you get, you know, like Ebenezer Scrooge, right? Nobody liked him because he burned everybody. Okay, so that's our second obstacle to community. Our third one is with our king. Our king in verses 13 to 16. Let's look at this. This is a confusing story, okay? And most scholars say that what's happening here is that it's actually combining two different stories. So let's look at it. Verse 13. Better a poor and wise young man than an old and foolish king who no longer knew how to take advice. For he went from prison to the throne. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Anybody that you know in the Old Testament who was poor and in prison and later went to the throne? Joseph, that's right. He's probably talking about Joseph here. For he went from prison to the throne, though in his own kingdom he had been poor. I saw all the living who move about under the sun, along with that young man who was to stand in the king's place. Exactly what happened with Joseph. He was made the vice regent. He was made the prime minister of all of Egypt. Whatever he said, the Pharaoh said. And then he says, there is no end of all the people, all of whom he led. Yet those who come later will not rejoice in him. Surely this is also vanity and striving after wind. Here's a king, a guy who came out of prison, who God blessed, and he went to this, you know, incredible level of influence and authority, with being compared with an old and foolish king who kept his own counsel, in verse 13, who no longer knew how to take advice. How does that happen? How does it happen that you get to a place at a certain level of authority and you think, I don't need any of you people anymore? I have it all figured out. And the answer is pride. I know everything I need to know. There's not something that you can tell me that will help me adjudicate this dispute, that will help me administer this property, that will help me, right? So this is the parable, really, of the foolish king who kept his own counsel. Pride. How does that get in the way of community? You don't really have community anymore. You don't really talk. And you can imagine the foolish king with his little council of advisors. Let's say there's 10 of them. And they, you know, send him an email and say, how come we don't talk anymore? You know? We used to be tight. In the last 5 or 6 years, I feel like you don't ever call. Right? There's no relationship there anymore because they are not needed. Right? Because he's sufficient in himself. Pride. So we've got those three. Envy, greed, pride. Okay, so we've seen the benefits of community. Some of the obstacles here. There are, of course, many other obstacles, but those are the obstacles that are referenced here in the passage. How do we remove these obstacles? Now, this I said it earlier on. This is one of these times where the preacher here in Ecclesiastes just kind of takes us to the edge of the cliff and just leaves us there. And so the way the chapter ends is with all the obstacles, and that's it. It's a little depressing, right? And so at the very, very beginning, the very first class we ever had in here, I said one of the reasons why we're going to go through Ecclesiastes is because it's a great book to see how to read any Old Testament book in the context of the big picture. And we talked in there about how Christians should read the Old Testament and things like that. So here's an example of that. How to remove the obstacles. He doesn't tell us in these verses how these obstacles get removed. But when you zoom out a little bit and you see the bigger picture, particularly Jesus, we get an idea of how these obstacles are removed. And, you know, we talked earlier about how, in that first class, about how Jesus himself says, in several places, one, Luke 24, all the law and the prophets were about me. Now, the term law and the prophets is a shorthand way of referring to the entire Old Testament. So, any time, we'll put it this way, if you are ever studying the Old Testament, and there's nothing distinctively Christian about the way you're studying it, you've missed something. Okay, you've missed something. Jesus himself says that. It was all about me. And so if you don't get to the how it's about him part, Maybe everything you've said here before is fine and good and right, but you've missed something important. And so I submit that this is the direction in which we get to answer the question, how do we remove the obstacles, okay? How do we remove them? First, greed. How is greed diminished? How is greed diminished? And I'll give just brief answers for each of these, and then we'll kind of give a summary conclusion. What's the opposite of greed? I said earlier, I kind of tipped my hand on this. What the opposite of greed, they might think, well, it's generosity. It's generosity. Right? Well, the opposite of greed is not just generosity. Generosity is an effect. Is an effect of the opposite of greed. Which is, our word liberty is a little weird. That kind of sits weird with us. How is that the opposite of greed? And I don't like leaving you with foreign language words, but there it is. Okay, so the opposite of greed, because the essence of greed is not just that you're miserly. Okay? It's not just being miserly. It's being captured by whatever the thing it is that you're craving. And so the opposite of it then is being free from that craving. Being free from that, being free from it. So this is kind of the counterbalance, the opposite. Well, let's look at the opposite for we'll do pride last. Let's look at the opposite for envy. Now, if you take that technical, what I said earlier, envy is sorrow at another's good, where you're sorry that they have that and you won't want them to have it, then the opposite of that technical sense of envy is being happy at another's good. You've all, I hope, had relationships with people where when something goes good for you, you know you can call somebody and they're going to be genuinely happy for you. And they're going to be in your corner. They're never going to be sorrowful about what's some good that's happened to you. The opposite, if you take the jealousy, right? Jealousy is just, I want one of those things too. And it's kind of eating me up that I don't have one. I'm glad you have one. You keep your Ninja Turtle, but I'd like one as well. And it's eating me up that I don't have one. The opposite of that is contentment. Accepting what I've been given under God's sovereignty. And last, pride. The opposite of pride. What is pride? An excessive concern with being better than other people. And it's different than vainglory. That may be a word you've heard before, but vainglory is wanting other people to see that you're better. See, a prideful person doesn't care whether other people see that they're better. They want to know internally that they're better. The vainglorious person, it's about the show. They want to be seen as better. This destroys the benefits of community. Right? This is the reason why we had this litany of humility at the beginning. The opposite of pride is humility. And what does that look like? Look back at that litany. That's why we did that. That's what humility looks like. The opposite of vainglory, where it's all about the show, it's all about you being seen, is letting God receive glory, not you. And there's a term for that, which I'll skip. There's a Latin word on that. Okay. Now, how are you supposed to do these things? Right? So you've got envy and greed and pride. And these things destroy our ability to be interdependent with other people. And there are many other things as well that interfere with that. They cause us to be like the guy in verses 7 and 8 who was alone. Many, many of us can have been in places, maybe you're there now, where you're surrounded by people and you feel alone. Something about this community, there's some obstacle here to the community. Maybe it's one of these things in your own heart. See, many, what we have to do is switch. For many of us, we think the problem is always outside of us. It's somebody else. And for many of us, if we're honest, the problem is one of these three things or something that we didn't mention. Right? And so how do you move from the bad thing to the good thing? Well, I want to submit to you, you'll never do it in your own power. You'll never be able to do it. You'll never be able to try hard enough. You'll never be able to pray enough. You won't be able to do this litany enough times in the day to get humble. All right? How are you going to do it? And the answer is, unless you have Jesus Christ, unless you are in Jesus, one of Paul's favorite phrases, in Christ, you'll never be able to do these things. You will never have the power to sincerely say some of these things in this litany. You'll never be able to do it. You'll never be able to, in the moment, seek another's good, even if it comes at your own detriment. And yet, that's the secret to the benefit of the community, of this interdependence. So the way that you do this, the way you get the power to do it, see, the Bible never tells you to do something without explaining to you how you get the power to do it. It's just that in this passage today, he left us at the cliff. And I want to give you the rest of the story. And so the way you get the power to do this, if you're feeling alone, the way you get the power to get together in the community to remove some of these obstacles is to see how Jesus allowed himself to be alone so that you could be in community. He allowed himself to be put in situations where in his darkest time, there was no person to pick him up. There was no person from whom he could seek counsel. All of his friends abandoned him. And in the last hour, he cries out in Aramaic, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani? My God, why have you left me alone?" He was made alone so that you didn't have to be. This destroys. It's like a radiation on a tumor. When you sit with that and you meditate on that, it begins to destroy the roots here of pride. You have no reason to be prideful. It begins to destroy the roots of greed because you've gotten everything you need to get. You've got everything that matters. And it destroys the roots of envy because now what you've received, you want others to receive it as well. And now you can be out for other people's good because their good doesn't cost you something. Because your treasure is not here where rust and moss can destroy. Your treasure is somewhere else. It can't be stolen. All of this is because Jesus allowed himself to be made alone so that we didn't have to be. Let's pray. Lord, you are great and good and kind and merciful. And you have sought after us when we didn't deserve it, and we fled from you. We give you thanks. We submit our hearts to you. We ask you to show us where in our lives we have these tumors of pride and envy and greed. Lord, remove them from us so we can be free. Amen.